Dr. Rima, thank you for coming on our program, and I think it is best to go ahead and let you describe your background and why you got into this field of being an advocate for health freedom. And go ahead.
Well, I'd be delighted to. I'm a physician, an MD. I was graduated in 1970 from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and I practiced drug-free psychiatry and medicine for a very long time. Yes, it is possible to practice drug-free psychiatry and medicine successfully. In fact, what happened was that people would come to me for whom every other familiar or conventional allopathic modality had failed, and they were either dying or they were without any ability to tolerate the treatments, the medication, etc., that had been prescribed for them. So they had, as they say so charmingly in allopathic medicine, failed treatment. Notice we blame the patient here. The patient fails the treatment. And they would come to me frequently cataclysmically ill. And what I would do is use the knowledge that I had gained from studying both inside the allopathic world and very far outside it, and try to find the underlying cause that had led to the disease or disability or incapacity, and then I would cure the underlying problem rather than focus on the symptoms, which is what conventional medicine does. And, of course, I'd try to keep a patient comfortable. If they were in pain, we would deal with that. If they had other problems, we would deal with that. But my main thrust was to find the underlying central cause and treat that. Well, I'm doing the same thing now. I have been watching all of our freedoms erode in the United States, and of course that's a contagion that has spread rapidly to other parts of the world through the, quote, war on terrorism and homeland security, but most importantly through the pharmaceutical dominance of what is laughingly called health care, but what is really illness care. Because let's face it, if you are making good health choices for yourself, you're likely to be eating clean, unadulterated food. You're likely to be using herbs and nutrients on a regular, intensive basis. You're likely to be avoiding irradiated food. You're likely to be taking care of yourself by avoiding vaccinations and using natural methods for your health care to maintain or regain your vigorous and robust health status. That means that you're healthy, or you're staying healthy or getting healthy through non-pharmaceutical means, and that makes you a simply wretched customer for the single most financially productive industry on earth, the pharmaceutical industry. According to Fortune 500, if you add up the profits of the 10 most profitable pharmaceutical companies in the world, they exceed in the aggregate the next 490 most profitable corporations on the planet. That means that illness is the most profitable industry in the world, and the single most important and significant economic competitor to the pharmaceutical industry, to institutionalized illness care, which makes its money from your getting sick and staying that way as long as possible and having access only to pharmaceutical treatments. The single most important economic competitor is good food and nutrients at a high potency level that effectively eliminate the toxic impact of the chemicals in our world and the underlying nutritional deficits which lead to the problems that we call disease. Now, that means that the pharmaceutical industry is willing to go a very long mile to make all food corrupt. That's a big statement. To make all food corrupt and to eliminate your right to use nutrients at a high potency and to have clean, unadulterated food. Now, for about 10 years, leading up to 2004. I had been watching the development of something called Codex, C-O-D-E-X, Alimentarius, A-L-I-M-E-N-T-A-R-I-U-S, which sounds like an intestinal parasite, but is actually a United Nations commission. That United Nations commission was created in 1962 by the United Nations through asking the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization, which we'll call WHO and FAO, to create a conjoint effort and establish a world commission to take over the world trade of food. If that is beginning to scare you, good, you're awake. It should scare the bejesus out of you. Now, how did this idea come to be? Well, it's very interesting. It happens that after he was convicted of crimes against humanity following the Second World War and the Nuremberg War Tribunals, he was actually convicted at the Nuremberg War Tribunals, along with 26 other executives from his organization. The head of IG Farben, the great German industrial war machine, which encompassed all of the civilian activities necessary to fight the Second World War, the head of IG Farben, whose name was Fritz Termeer, small T-E-R, capital M-E-E-R, was sitting in jail along with 26 other IG Farben executives. Fritz Termeer had designed the Auschwitz slave labor camp. He had designed the Auschwitz extermination camp. He was, in fact, the architect of the entire German death system.
You're saying they did this while they were in jail?
Well, I'm saying that he was thinking while he was in jail.
Obviously,
he had way too much time on his hands. And
it occurred to him,
obviously, and this is my interpolation of what must have been going on in his head based on what comes next, it occurred to him that they really had wasted a lot of effort with the railroad cars and the concentration camps and so on. And if they wanted to finish the depopulation, the genocidal activities that they had started but not gone far enough to satisfy the rabid depopulationists, all they really needed to do was control the world's food. Now, interestingly, Fritz Termeer was a pharmaceutical executive before he became the head of IG Farben. He was the head of Bayer Pharmaceutical in Germany. So he got out of jail, along with the other 26 IG Farben guys, and he went back to work as the head of the now newly independent Bayer Pharmaceutical Company. Yes, the same folks who make aspirins in the cute little tins. And they also are one of the world's major genetic modifiers of food and animals. They make pesticides like the nicotinic pesticide derivative that is killing the bees worldwide. They make quite a number of pretty questionable things. Anyway, he got a new suit, I presume, and a haircut and a new pair of shoes, went back to work as the head of Bayer Pharmaceutical, and in 1952, he called together five other guys who used to be pharmaceutical executives before they went to work for IG Farben, and now were pharmaceutical executives again in Germany, and he had a meeting with them, and he said, "Hey, guys, how about we asked the United Nations to take over the world food supply?" And they said, "Oh, cool, what a great idea." And out of that came a letter which Fritz Termeer and the other pharmaceutical executives signed and sent to the United Nations. Fritz Termeer delivered that letter in 1952, and 10 years later, Codex Alimentarius was born. Now, Codex Alimentarius takes control of the international trade of every single bite of food or swallow of liquid other than pharmaceuticals that passes your lips. And Codex Alimentarius, and I have attended many Codex Alimentarius meetings, Codex Alimentarius is driven by the interests of the five bigs: Big Pharma, Big Chema, Big Agribiz, Big Biotechna, and Big Medica. The United States bullies the rest of the world into accepting whatever is good for industry. It should come as no surprise that the U.S. FDA sends the representatives that take the U.S. positions to Codex. And the FDA, as we know, along with its sister corrupt agency, the USDA, is not in the business of protecting you or your food. A recent congressional investigation showed that it's broken. A recent National Institutes of Medicine investigation showed that it's broken. And anybody who looks at the disastrous state of health in the United States and the toxic drugs and vaccines and chemicals that are permitted, the genetically modified foods, which are, by the way, never, never tested for safety. Never. They are forbidden to be labeled in the United States as genetically modified or containing genetically modified ingredients, and they are never tested for safety based on a 1992 executive order from then President George Bush Sr., which said that they're declared, not studied scientifically, but declared administratively to be equivalent to other foods and therefore may not be labeled. So the United States pushes forward the use of hormones and pesticides and chemicals and irradiation at levels which should terrify anybody who studies these things on a technical basis, as I do, or anybody who studies them on a policy basis, or anybody who's just interested in clean food and health. Therefore, at the end of 2004, my husband, Major General Albert N. Stubblebine III, a two-star U.S. Army general, and I decided to close our medical practice and take on this health freedom monster globally. So we created the Natural Solutions Foundation, which is a tax-exempt organization, www.healthfreedomusa.org, healthfreedomusa.org. And by the way, when you go to the website, which I hope you will, healthfreedomusa.org, I hope that you will click on the upper right-hand corner or elsewhere throughout the site and sign up for the free Health Freedom e-alerts. That list is secure. We never rent or sell it. We never lend it. It stays with us. And you will be informed of what's going on and how to protect your health freedom. And what's going on is very significant. We started by finding the solution to Codex, and then General Stubblebine and I hit the road. We started traveling for 3.5 years straight, and we would go to the poorest countries in the world and meet with their presidents, meet with their ministers of health, meet with their ministers of agriculture and other relevant decision makers, their leading doctors, and we would say to them, look, Codex Alimentarius is going to kill you by adulterating your people's food supply. And they would say, we know. But the World Trade Organization will impose sanctions upon our fragile economy that will destroy us. We have no choice but to comply with Codex. And we would say, aha. And we would present them with a book that you can get online called the Codex e-book at our site, healthfreedomusa.org. You can order the same document that we present to presidents around the world, ministers of health, to show them a template of how any country in the world can reject anything that Codex does. And let me tell you that in my deep study of Codex, I have yet to find any new law that Codex does that serves health or the well-being of people. It all serves industry in a very, very dangerous way. And remember, it's really all about making sure that people have a go with their food only and no natural medicine available to them. And so you can find out how we in this country and all over the world can do something that promotes health for that food rather than allows it to be degraded, which in turn degrades our health. But, oh, and by the way, the World Health Organization, in a special report along with the Food and Agriculture Organization in 2002, published a document that details the fact that there is an epidemic of preventable diseases of undernutrition. And those diseases are cancer, cardiovascular disease, stroke, diabetes, and obesity. I'll repeat those. The chronic, degenerative, preventable, non-communicable diseases of undernutrition. Cancer, cardiovascular disease, stroke, diabetes, obesity. These five conditions are the five killers around the world that head the list after, of course, properly used prescription drugs. But these five killers are also the five main money makers of the pharmaceutical industry. Therefore, Codex is mandating undernutrition in order to increase the rates and the profits from cancer, cardiovascular disease, stroke, diabetes, and obesity. Now, at the same time that we're facing a food fight of major significance, we are also facing incursions on our health freedoms, such as compulsory vaccination. New Jersey, for instance, has, based on the fact that Governor Corzine wanted to give the pharmaceutical industry something to keep the headquarters in New Jersey, New Jersey has said that every child from the age of 6 months must have an annual flu shot, despite the fact that New Jersey already has the highest incidence of autism in the country, far outstripping California. One child in 56 is autistic in New Jersey. So New Jersey, New Jersey, well, the national average at this point has sunk to under one child in 100. We're about at one child in 98 on a national average. And when you think about what is in vaccines, it's not just the mercury. And by the way, in spite of all the hype, 94% of the flu vaccines available in the United States still contain mercury. It's not only the mercury, it's the fluoride, it's the aluminum, and by the way, fluoride and aluminum are synergistically neurotoxic. It's the monosodium glutamate and aspartame, which are neurotoxins. And why would you put sweeteners in vaccines? Well, because they damage the brain and the immune system and make people good customers right from the very beginning for the illness care products and services. The aluminum hydroxide is particularly horrible in vaccines, so is the formaldehyde. But even worse are the bits and pieces of fetal cells, the DNA that no one has characterized, the stealth viruses, which the FDA has known about and acknowledged exist in vaccines for at least the past 45 years, the cancer-causing and leukemia-causing viruses, which are acknowledged by the FDA to be present, and such happy nonsense as the fact that Gardasil, the very dangerous and very, very little tested drug, supposedly declared safe for girls and now allegedly safe for little boys who can't get cervical cancer, by the way, because in case nobody noticed, they lack a cervix. Gardasil is only effective, if it's effective, against four strains of human papillomavirus, HPV, which do not cause cancer and, in fact, will, according to FDA documents, which I have secured, will actually increase the cervical cancer rate 400% in women and girls who receive it. Now, Gardasil has racked up over $1 billion in profits from Merck, its manufacturer. And now the Immigration and Naturalization Service requires that every girl coming to the United States for a green card or for naturalization as a citizen must have the Gardasil series of shots at a cost of over $1,000 when these are desperately dangerous measures. And by the way, in case anybody thinks that babies, newborn babies, are likely to engage in the use of contaminated recreational drug needles or emergency room contact with contaminated blood and therefore have to be protected against hepatitis B, let me remind you that the same hepatitis B vaccine, which is mandated in the United States for infants who have no immune system of their own and no blood-brain barrier to protect them from this dangerous substance that's injected into them within 12 hours of birth, that in France, the manufacturer of this same vaccine is on trial for homicide because of the dangers of this vaccine, which, by the way, happens to contain huge concentrations of a leukemia-causing virus known to the manufacturers, but too expensive to remove by ultrafiltration. I could go on and on. Unlabeled genetically modified foods are now being challenged by three extremely important bills which have been introduced into the House by Representative Kucinich. And those bills need an absolute torrent of outpouring of support. And so if people do sign up for our Health Freedom e-alerts, they can click on a button which sends their letter to their senators and their representatives to tell them that genetically modified food must be studied for its safety, must be labeled for consumer selection, and must be contained because these foods, or Frankenfoods as they are properly better known, these foods in fact do contaminate every plant around them, every animal that eats them, because although we were initially told, just as when I was in grade school as a child, I was told that atomic energy was positive and would only help us. There were no dangers to atomic energy because science knew so well how to use atomic energy. Well, that turns out to be just slightly fatuous. The same thing is true about genetically modified foods. And if you go to our Health Freedom blog, which you get to by going to our main website, www.healthfreedomusa.org, and clicking on the second button down on the left-hand side, the Health Freedom blog, you can look up what I have posted there as the GM files, and you will see a compendium of scientific evidence that GM food is dreadfully dangerous. But how would you know if you're eating GM food? Well, if you grow your own, you've got a chance. If you make friends with your local farmers through a community sustainable agriculture program or your local organic farmers market, and you spend some time talking to the local farmers, you might be able to source some good organic food. However, packaged organic food in the United States is permitted to contain an astonishing 10% of genetically modified foods. Genetically modified foods cause cancer. They cause autoimmune disease. They cause infertility. By the way, one of the varieties of corn that is used in genetically modified food is owned, the patent is owned by Monsanto and DuPont in a joint venture. And this particular gene has been introduced into corn to cause permanent male sterility. That means a kid who eats it, a grown-up who eats it, somebody who passes it on through genetic transmission, to their unborn child, because these genes get woven into our own DNA in unpredictable ways. This gene is designed to cause your body, if you're a male, to produce spermicide that will create permanent male infertility. And if you're a female, it will cause your body to excrete and secrete spermicide so that when sperm is inserted during the process of intercourse or artificial insemination, you will then not be able to conceive because your body will kill the sperm. Now, at this point, people ought to be saying to themselves, hey, wait a minute, that sounds like population reduction. That sounds like genocide. And I can't see any reason to come to any different conclusion. In fact, the United Nations has said in its Millennium 2100 document, its Millennium 2000 document, to which the United States subscribes, that the population of the world has to be reduced by 80 to 90% in order to create a, quote, sustainable planet. So the phrase sustainable and sustainability, those phrases have been hijacked to mean depopulation. And in 1974, Henry Kissinger wrote a special memo, a secret memo, which has been revealed through Freedom of Information Act documentation, stating that the first priority of U.S. foreign policy had to be depopulation, quote, starting with the third world countries, end quote. Now, the World Health Organization has been very happily going along with that and was found guilty in the Philippines just recently of involuntarily sterilizing 3 million Filipinas by introducing in their vaccines for other things human hormones which cause the women to create antibodies to their own hormones necessary for implanting and carrying implanting a fertilized ovum in the wall of the uterus and carrying a fetus to term. That same vaccination strategy was used starting in 1985 by the World Health Organization, and this is in black and white in their literature, to, quote, eliminate 150 million excess sub-Saharan Africans. What they did was use this same strategy in vaccines that supposedly would eliminate things like smallpox and tetanus and other public health hazard diseases to render women sterile. Worse yet, in places like Thailand, the hill tribes, when a woman becomes pregnant, the women of the hill tribes are forced to receive an injection by the Thai government. This is documented, by the way. This is not rumor. This is documented and confirmed. They're forced to receive an injection or their baby won't get an ID card. And in Thailand, you simply can't survive without an ID card. So when they have this injection, what happens is that the component of the injection that we're talking about, which is called human chorionic gonadotropin, causes the women to make antibodies to that hormone in their body, and they lose the baby that they're pregnant with and can never get pregnant again. This has been acknowledged by the Thai government. So the baby doesn't need an ID card because there's no baby, and that particular woman will never have a baby again. Now, this same vaccine strategy is in how many vaccines in the United States? We don't know. It's been used, we now know, and the World Health Organization has reluctantly acknowledged that it's been used with USAID funding to pay for it in Central America, in South America, 1.5 million women in Brazil, and something like 3 million women in Argentina. And it's now available as a choice for reproductive control for young women who get a shot and they're told that they won't have a baby for a year. well, it's true, they won't have a baby for a year, but that year is only the beginning of a life of infertility. Now, these are health freedom issues, and so is the issue of whether you can access high potency, high dose, high quality nutrients. Now, there's a petition from a drug company in front of the FDA right now to make natural source vitamin B6 illegal and to make only synthetic B6 available, because that has been patented. And on we go. In Europe, the European Food Supplements Directive, which is Europe's implementation of one part of the Codex corpus of standards and guidelines, is taking things off the shelves, even as we speak. And under the Codex program, which the U.S. has said that it will, quote, harmonize with, let me talk about that word. I suggest that as you think about the word harmonize or harmonization, you capitalize the first four letters, H-A-R-M. In 1994, the United States said that it would harmonize with Codex standards and guidelines, even if they were not yet fully complete. And that means that the FDA and the USDA and the EPA and the FTC are implementing Codex guidelines just as fast as ever they can. But they're also mandating vaccination, and we can talk about avian flu mandates in a moment. They're also mandating vaccination for more and more and more and more conditions, when in fact the vaccines are dangerous and the vaccines are not effective. In spite of what we've all been taught, vaccination actually doesn't reduce disease. Most epidemics occur in fully vaccinated populations, and once a vaccinated population gets an epidemic, the agent, whether it's measles or tuberculosis or whatever, actually mutates and becomes more virulent. So the vaccinations harm people directly and indirectly, but my goodness, they make a lot of money. And since the pharmaceutical industry has very few new drugs in the pipeline, very few, and since money is what they do, and profits are what they're after, they are whipping up fever and fervor for more and more and more and more vaccinations. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, all the other sort of official organs are definitely on the take here. But let's think about what we can do. Not too many months ago, New York State said, tell you what, we, the lawmakers of New York State, the Senate and the Assembly, will abrogate our responsibility to decide which vaccinations we want our people to have here in New York State, and we will simply make all recommendations made by the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices mandatory for everyone in the state without exemption. Without exemption means that if you have an autistic child who's already been vaccine injured, that kid still has to be vaccinated again. It means if you have a genetic susceptibility to the damage that a component can cause, let's say aspartame, you still have to be vaccinated. And it also means that you have no right to determine what goes into your body through your skin or doesn't. And that's a significant constitutional issue. So the people of New York State and the people of the rest of the country, helped very much by the action alerts of the Natural Solutions Foundation, became so bestirred by this and were so active that New York State backed off this insane but highly profitable for the pharmaceutical law. And they said, okay, I tell you what, we're going to rethink the entire issue of vaccination. We're going to study whether we should eliminate mandatory vaccinations altogether. And good on them. New Jersey is in the process of trying to pass a new piece of legislation right now that says that even if you take your kid out of school in order to homeschool them to avoid the dangers of vaccination. And remember, by the time a child reaches the age of 15, if it's a girl, she will have had, in New Jersey and most other states, 78 vaccines. 78 vaccines. The official position of the CDC is that the immune system of a child can handle up to 1,000 vaccinations. Of course, we know this to be insane. So New Jersey is fixing to pass a law, unless we stop them, that says that even if you homeschool your child, the child must be vaccinated according to the schedule approved by the superintendent of schools. Forget about parental rights. Forget about exemptions. Religious exemptions and exemptions of conscience are being taken away from us administratively. And to make matters worse, there's the avian flu. Now, the avian flu is, as far as our research has been able to show us, a completely man-made danger. That's quite a statement. We have evidence that we've published to show that the avian flu virus, the H5N1 virus, was, before it was genetically tampered with, simply not a cause of disease in either birds or in people. That's a very important statement. It was not a cause of disease in birds or people. Starting in 1985, it suddenly became a source of disease in pigs. Now, my understanding as a physician and as a reasonably well-educated person is that pigs don't fly, and pigs are not birds. How did it happen that this non-disease-causing, this non-pathogenic organism leapt from birds to pigs? Well, it leapt from birds to pigs, we believe, with the help of a World Health Organization laboratory in Scotland. And the next time you hear about this terribly dangerous pandemic that is supposed to wipe out 150 million people on each continent, but has not been a disease-causing organism any time in the past, before 1985, is in Vietnam. So obviously these pigs flew to Vietnam and gave the deadly disease to a bunch of chickens there, chickens and ducks. Well, as it happens, the chickens and ducks that are being culled and killed all over the world for this supposedly deadly potential pandemic disease, these chickens and ducks have all been vaccinated, and they've all been reared in industrial food production situations. Patio chickens, backyard chickens, outdoor flocks don't get avian flu. It's the industrial chickens who are given antibiotics and whose immune systems are suppressed from the drugs and stress of their industrial rearing who do, in fact, get avian flu after they've been inoculated.
Dr. LeBeau, yes. Is this tied at all to the microbiologist that ended up passing away suspiciously?
They didn't pass away. They were murdered.
Okay, all right, well.
Yes, it is. Okay. You're talking about people in London who were murdered in June.
Right, right.
And the other, lots of other microbiologists and biochemists and virologists. Yes, indeed, we believe it is. Now, what we have determined was that the six-year project funded by the National Institutes of Health to reconstruct the genetic material of the 1918 so-called Spanish flu, which was actually, believe it or not, a biological weapon, the world's most successful biological weapon to date, which was created on the order of Teddy Roosevelt when he was president. This flu was disseminated by American troops who had been inoculated with it in Kansas, sent to Manhattan, the island of Manhattan, given a leave so that they could spread it around, and then sent to Spain, where they were exposed to the poison gases that they would experience in the trenches, that under the stimulus of stress and poor food and the poison gases, the virus mutated as it was intended to do and became highly, highly pathogenic, just the way the virus is supposed to mutate in the chickens who are under stress and being given drugs and pathogenic substances in the industrial rearing houses. So vaccines have been created. Hundreds of billions, maybe trillions of dollars have been pumped into the vaccines. And one of the conclusions to which we have come is that the vaccines themselves have been weaponized, because not only has the avian flu been weaponized with the deadly 1918 genes put into it and vials, this is documented, it's hard to believe, but it's absolutely documented, vials of the newly created wildly pathogenic virus, which had the avian flu H5N1 genetic material, to which had been added the 1918 bird flu, the 1918 Spanish flu genetic material. Vials of that were sent unmarked to most of the hospital laboratories and most of the research laboratories in the world. Now, you would think that if you've just created what you believe to be potentially the world's most deadly pandemic virus, you might tell the laboratories to whom you were sending it that they should handle it with care. That didn't happen.
Wasn't this also, they claimed that that was done by accident? Do I not remember a kind of an announcement on our news that that's what happened?
I guess it's sort of like claiming that the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima and the bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki just happened to get there by accident. Yeah. However, the science is not perfect, and what's happened is that the pandemic has not yet materialized. We'll get back to the vaccine in a minute. So since the vaccine has not yet materialized, the Wellcome, W-E-L-L-C-O-M-E, Foundation of Burroughs Wellcome, a huge pharmaceutical giant which is now part of GlaxoSmithKline, the Wellcome Foundation recently gave a grant to British laboratories to find out why the pandemic potential of the modified H5N1 virus has not yet been realized. In other words, it's kind of a dud like the SARS virus so far, but they're working on it to fix that right up. This is crazy, except for the fact that it's intentional. It's a kind of scientifically mediated madness called depopulation, called genocide. Now let's talk about the vaccine for a moment. Oh, so these two biochemists, microbiologists in London, were brutally murdered, tortured, and stabbed hundreds of times in their apartment in June because they had discovered that, well, I can't say because, we assume it is because. They were brutally murdered, and they are the same people who had discovered that not only had the H5N1 virus been weaponized, but the vaccines, which are designed supposedly to protect against it, had also been weaponized to cause the pandemic disease. We had been publishing the same information using the term weaponized avian flu, and you can Google that, since the middle of the summer. We did not know about the murder of the biochemists until September, because this news never hit the worldwide media. It was published in Britain and Europe, but the rest of the world never quite picked up on the story. When we did find out about it, we issued a press release asking for the organization that brought this news forward and said that these people had been killed by a joint British Mossad assassination team who were currently in custody, to provide substantiation for all of the things that they had said. This press release was, like many of our other press releases, censored. and was not permitted to be put out on the wires. So we published it using the Internet, and you can find it on the Health Freedom blog on our site, www.healthfreedomusa.org. Now, on July 23rd, and this is something that I urge you to check out for yourself if you don't believe it. On July 23rd of this past summer, the Health and Human Services Department, which is the parent of FDA and CDC, said that in order to prevent the pandemic, the avian flu pandemic, they were going to vaccinate every man, woman, and child in the United States, quote, starting with those who wanted it, end quote. On July 24th, the Department of Homeland Security issued essentially the same announcement using the same words. And they gave a schedule of inoculation priority, and first responders and healthcare professionals would be the first to get this vaccination. Well, what vaccination? It happens that 100 million doses of a vaccine prepared in China, where, as we know, the sanitary and manufacturing standards are not exactly of the best, but a vaccine prepared in China at a special factory by Sanofi Pasteur was brought to the United States and shipped to a plant in Swiftwater, Pennsylvania. That plant had the job of taking the 100 million doses of vaccine and putting them into individual syringes for individual doses. Now, mind you, this is a vaccine that was approved without human testing, formal human testing, and was approved under an emergency provision that says whatever happens to people who get the vaccine doesn't give them any liability rights, which reinforces an earlier FDA statement reinforced by Congress and the courts that vaccine manufacturers and drug manufacturers have no liability whatsoever for any damage that the substance does as long as it's been approved by the FDA. So without any testing in humans, this drug was approved, and this vaccine, and is now ready in warehouses to be vaccinated into people. We don't know what else is in it, whether they want that vaccination or not. Now, the same vaccine, we believe that it was the identical vaccine, was used in an informal vaccine test in Poland. A bunch of vagrants, somewhat over 300 vagrants, were given $1 each, and they allowed themselves to be vaccinated with the same avian flu vaccine. 11 of them died immediately upon receiving the vaccine. Kind of like girls and women have died instantly upon receiving the Gardasil vaccine. But this vaccine killed 11 of them. And then about 220 of them became so ill that they were rushed to hospital, and we don't know exactly what happened to them. What we do know, remember, the total population was approximately 310 people. What we do know is that the two doctors and four nurses who were involved in this, quote, informal vaccine test are standing trial for homicide in Poland. So Poland is able to do a lot better than we are in terms of protecting their people from medical and scientific wrongdoers. So this same vaccine, we believe, is now stored up at a cost of $15 per dose. That's $1.5 billion, ready to be inoculated into the arms or thighs or wherever of Americans. Now, suppose you're an American and you don't want to be vaccinated. Well, once a state of pandemic has been declared, once the head of the Health and Human Services Department has used the word pandemic and said there is a pandemic, then you have no choice, because Patriot Act 1, Patriot Act 2, the BioShield Act, the BARDA Act, BioShield 2, and a number of other national legislations, plus the absolutely ubiquitous Medical Emergency Powers Act that virtually every state in the union has passed, make it mandatory for you to receive vaccination. If you don't receive a vaccination, then you can be incarcerated without any time limit for as long as the government decides to keep you incarcerated and quarantined, because that's designed to prevent the spread of the contagion. That strikes me as such a violation of the very concept of health freedom that anybody hearing this had better become active. The best way that they can become active is to become part of the health freedom activists army, if you will. Go to healthfreedomusa.org, sign up for the health freedom alerts, and start flooding the government with these pieces of information saying that this is not what you want, this is not what you will accept, and become knowledgeable about the options.
Dr. LeBeau, one thing to kind of back up what they're saying, I mean, what their intent is here is the hugely increased building and setting up of prisons.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and also, let me try to think my train of thought here, but what's to prevent them from giving that vaccine and telling us it's something else, too?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. The issue is one of trust and freedom. We don't trust them because they lie. They can easily tell us that the vaccine is for something else and it can be a weaponized vaccine, or they can tell us that it's for protection against the avian flu and it's a weaponized vaccine. Remember, the Henry Kissinger memo said that depopulation was to start in the third world, but the World Health Organization and the United Nations and the U.S. government had said that for a sustainable climate, after all, 90% of us need to go. This is not very comforting. So it's extremely important for us to take back our freedom, take back our health freedom. After all, health freedom is really not something we can derive from freedom. Even when our constitutional freedoms already do not. Now, my only wife, author of Letters to a Young Patriarch, the end of America, Letters to a Young Patriarch, and Living Liberty, a new book, did an interview, which I was watching recently. Made our phone connection this morning and started to do this show, in which she talks about the fact that a coup has occurred on October 1st. We have U.S. military troops in the United States now answerable only to the Commander-in-Chief, the President, not to Congress, for the purpose of crowd control, subduing unruly individuals, and relocating individuals. How much more do people need before they realize that there is very little time to become active and to take back their health freedom and their freedoms? We still have the opportunity to take it back nonviolently. I am an advocate of nonviolence, but I am also an advocate of action. HealthFreedomUSA.org is about freedom, and it's about action to secure, expand, and protect that freedom. We need your help. We need your involvement. We need your action. Now, what are we doing in Panama? I am talking to you right now from Panama. The Natural Solutions Foundation has realized that the basic underlying issue, and remember at the beginning of our talk today together, I told you that as a physician, I would look for the basic underlying cause and deal with that. So we believe the basic underlying cause most of what is going on is the control of the food production system. Go back to Fritz Termeer sitting in jail in 1948 to 52, and he realized that if you control the world's food, you control the world. So we think that it's very important for people to take back the production of food. The local farmers have forgotten all over the world how to farm without chemicals, and they are being suckered into the deadly trap of genetically modified foods as if those were cheaper and more productive. In fact, they're less productive and more dangerous because more pesticides are used and they're far more expensive. Peasant farmers are being driven off their land, and the industrial food chain is taking over the food production that local people once managed. So we have set up, we've created a program called International Decade of Nutrition, which you can take a look at www.naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. And the purpose of the International Decade of Nutrition is to demonstrate how to end the hunger problem on this planet and how to give farmers back control of the food production. For instance, the World Health Organization says that it wants to eliminate all outdoor flocks and regulate all chicken and duck and fowl production to industrial farming. So it's the industrial farm birds that have the hormones and the antibiotics and the diseases and get avian flu, by the way. But that means that the subsistence farmers, the local peasants who raise their patio chickens, as they're called here in the Spanish speaking world, will be forbidden from raising their chickens, and only industrial chickens will be available.
Dr. LeBeau?
Yes.
Can I call you back? I mean, we've done pretty good at getting this through an hour without too much problem, but can I call you back and then just continue on from this point?
Sure.
See if that helps the connection there?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Hi there.
Hi. Let's hope we can try it again here. And
okay. How is that going?
What now?
How was the interview going?
It was going fine.
Okay. You're getting this signal and everything?
Right. Are you there?
Tell me when.
Okay.
Tell me when.
Oh, okay, just go ahead.
Okay. So the International Decade of Nutrition is designed to set up a series of demonstration projects, and one of them is a demonstration farm and farm school. Now, when General Stubblebine and I were in Benin, Africa, one of the small West African countries on the western curve of that continent, we met with not only people from the government of Benin, but also people from Songhai, S-O-N-G-H-A-I Foundation. The Songhai Foundation has created a zero emissions, that means non-polluting, farming system, which is organic, and which increases the fertility of the land unbelievably while enhancing the fertility for future use, and produces its own power through biodigestion, through methane-producing use of everything that is scrap in the farm or the waste products of the farm, human, animal, and agriculture. It's an extremely efficient, extremely exciting approach to farming, and has the capacity to feed the world's population abundantly because it can be adapted all over the world. We decided that we would set up a teaching farm here in Panama, in the Chiriquí Highlands of Panama. And we chose Panama for a whole number of reasons, which we'll be happy to talk to anybody about who's interested in this. And we decided that we would set up the farm school for farmers from all over the world, regionally and locally and internationally as well, and that we would also set up a natural health facility practicing the kind of medicine that I have practiced for so many years and incorporating the skills of other people who practice natural medicine and health care. And we would have some homes, and we would have a small hotel for people who come either to learn what we're doing or to enjoy the absolutely incredible beauty of this area and the eternal spring-like weather conditions, the clean water, the clean air, and take this information home with them in their hearts and in their heads. The name Chiriqui, the name of the province, in its original Indian language, means the Valley of the Moon. And we decided that our project here would be called the Valley of the Moon Eco-Community. And General Sobelman and I have located in Panama, in Chiriqui, specifically to facilitate this and bring it to fruition. We have a community of interest of, I would say, about 265 people who are members of a special forum, the Natural Solutions Panama Forum, where we're discussing how this works and how to become a participant. And it's a very, very exciting project because, you see, as a physician looking at the basic underlying causes, I see food and food production as the central key to health, to autonomy, to freedom, and to social integrity, because when the farmers are driven off the land, as they are all over the world, they have no place to go but to the cities, where they become the abjectly poor who die, whose children die.
Am I hearing your husband, General Stubblebine, there also on the phone?
He's not on the phone. He's sitting next to me.
Okay. I was just...
But he is here, yes.
Okay. I was just curious because I could hear him. So, and I was just wondering if he's, you know, you'd like him to join in at all either and giving...
Well, right now, Melody, the only way I can do that is to take the headphones out of the computer and have us talk to you on speakerphone, and I know from past experience
that
transmission is very poor quality. What you can do, if you'd like, is set up a separate interview with him and from him. He has quite a lot to add to this. He retired from the U.S. Army as the commanding general of the Intelligence and Security Command, which was the strategic intelligence arm of the Army, and he is a brilliant strategic analyst who has quite a lot to say about what's going on and how we're approaching this from a strategic rather than a tactical point of view. In other words, they're figuring out what the problem is and then figuring out how to solve it and then implementing it. That's the tactical part. And the implementation includes setting up this community here in the Chiriqui Highlands. And I invite anybody who's interested to go to www.naturalsolutionsfoundation.org and read there about the International Decade of Nutrition and the Valley of the Moon project. Now, let me tell you, and contact us if you're interested. Let me tell you something very, very exciting in this topic, if I may. I love coffee. My husband loves coffee. And from a natural medicine point of view, coffee used as a coffee enema, as long as it's clean organic coffee, is a very important liver detox procedure. Coffee is very important in a lot of ways. Well, when we came to Panama to start the Valley of the Moon project, we quickly learned that here in the highlands, the black gold of Panama is coffee. And we also learned that there is a fungus that is devastating the coffee crops. The coffee growers have no choice, they think, but to use synthetic, deadly fungicides to eliminate a fungus called ojo de gallo, O-G-A-D-E-G-A-L-L-O, which means eye of the rooster because the fungus looks like a rooster's eye on the plant. So we said, wait a minute. I've been a physician treating funguses in people for almost 40 years. Funguses are pretty much alike. We should be able to use the same methods that I use to treat people and get rid of candida and other funguses for the plants. We will do that. And so we purchased a small coffee finca or farm, which has not had any pesticides or chemicals applied for 4 years out of neglect, but that's okay. And we said, good, it's got ojo de gallo. It's a heavily infected coffee finca. It's perfect for us. And we started using natural preparation that is totally, totally biological and organic to raise the coffee and harvest the coffee and produce the coffee with zero chemicals. The coffee is wonderful. We've begun the coffee harvest. Anybody who wants to make a donation to the Natural Solutions Foundation and get what we believe is the best coffee in the world sent to them can make a $25 donation. They'll get a $20 tax deduction. It's the only coffee in the world that the United States government pays you to drink, and you'll be drinking clean coffee and supporting health freedom at the same time. That's pretty important. If you want to buy lots of bags of coffee, that's great. The Valley of the Moon coffee is the beginning of the clean, unadulterated demonstration project food that we will make available. And I urge you to support the Natural Solutions Foundation through donations, which are completely tax deductible, or through the purchase of this magnificent coffee, which will give you a $25 purchase and a $20 tax donation. If you buy four bags, we'll throw in the shipping. This is something you want to do for your body because you really don't want the pesticides and the fungicides and the herbicides that go into conventional coffee. And this supports health freedom, too. We're very excited about this.
Now, are you saying that coffee orchard or whatever you call it, it had fungus and then you corrected it, or you...
Yes, ma'am. We were so happy when we saw this. It's called a finca, F-I-N-C-A, or farm. When we saw that the coffee plants had already been planted, it's a 10 hectare or a 22.5 acre area planted with coffees high up in the mountains, and it had pretty heavy fungus infestation. And we said, great, we know how to cure that. We've been treating it with all natural methods, biological probiotics and nutrients, and the fungus is dying and the plants are thriving, just as my patients would thrive when we killed off the fungus that was making them so sick.
So you use probiotics are very, very helpful on this, then.
Extreme probiotics and nutrients. Uh-huh. And we have been able to start this process in a way that we are very excited about. And now the coffee is being harvested, and we're able to offer it to people who want to drink the best coffee in the world and support health freedom at the same time. They can make a donation in multiples of $25. Or they can, that's what they can do. And then we will ask them for their name and their address and their shipping information and make sure that they have this coffee starting in November when it's been roasted and milled and all those wonderful things have happened to it. And it makes a wonderful, wonderful gift. Here's the best coffee in the world and it's supporting health freedom. We'll send a gift card and so on. This is the first of the Valley of the Moon products. But the point of the Valley of the Moon is to reclaim food production for farmers around the world. Now, people always say to me, but there really are too many people. There's a population problem. Indeed, there may be a population problem. Some people say yes, some people say no. I think there is. But it's been shown all over the world, in every society in the world, no matter what the religious background, no matter what the educational level, that the best way to reduce population and to increase the quality of life in a community is to educate women. Well, not surprisingly, that works pretty well for me. And so, at the same time, that we need to reclaim the farming capacity of the local communities around the world, including in the United States, by the way. We also need to educate women, and we have programs to do that as well. How do we reclaim farming and food for people who live in cities or towns? Through something called foot square gardening, with a 4 foot by 4 foot piece of land or tubs of earth on your patio or community gardens, 4 foot by 4 foot, properly managed, you can feed a family of four for approximately, for no money to speak of, each year.
This one I'll have to see.
It's quite extraordinary. And so we will be teaching foot square, well, down here we'll call it meter square, gardening to urban people. We already have several groups of people who are asking us to teach them. We'll be teaching it at the Valley of the Moon. We'll be teaching it in many situations. And we have some advanced technologies, which we are giving a trial to in Benin, two separate agricultural programs to increase crops without any chemicals or pollutants whatsoever by as much as 600%. These are things that we're working on. Of course, we need donations. We have no government support. We have no commercial support. We are entirely supported by people's donations. For instance, there's a Codex meeting coming up in South Africa at the end of October, beginning of November. The only way we can get there, the only way we can buy the tickets and the hotel and the food and so on, the only way we can continue our vitally important and highly successful work at Codex, and by the way, it was our foundation which succeeded in blocking the United States from adding fluoride to baby food to formula for infants. Our organization presented a scientific dossier to the delegates at the meeting in Thailand, and we were able to give them the information that they needed to block the United States, not to the pleasure of the U.S., I can tell you. Well, that's the kind of work that we do, and we have been very effective. If we can't get to this next Codex meeting because we don't have the money, then that work can't continue. I can tell you that we have created a war of opposition on the African continent to non-labeled genetically modified food and seeds. That work needs to continue. South Africa presented a document to the Codex meeting in Canada in May about this issue. The African countries all stood with South Africa. The United States called Johannesburg, called Pretoria, the capital of South Africa, and demanded that South Africa retract this document from the Codex meeting. South Africa was forced to knuckle under, but the African countries were so incensed by that that they were determined even more to prevent non-labeled genetically modified food from coming into their countries. And today, because of what we've done, South Africa has mandated labeling on genetically modified food. That is a direct result of our work. And the meeting is in South Africa, coming up at the end of this month. Right now, donations, because of the economic crisis, because of the election cycle, because of whatever, have not been sufficient to allow us to buy the tickets to get there. So if people want a voice at Codex, ours is the only one. If people want a voice at Codex and they want to control what the industrial forces are and the pharmaceutical forces are doing to their food, ours is the only effective voice, I'm sorry to say. And we need support. www.healthfreedomusa.org has a donate tab. Use it.
Dr. LeBeau, it's also important that people understand, because you're not getting grants, which a lot of these organizations, we've been kind of weaned on getting grants for everything. And
that is correct. We have no grants. The grants, do you really think that the Rockefeller Foundation would give us a grant?
No, but what I'm saying is that I don't think a lot of people understand how what a what an evil thing grants can be.
Indeed. Absolutely. They control the science. They control the outcomes. They control the wording, and they control the focus because, you know, as well as I do, he who has the gold makes the rule. My father always used to say, he whose gold I eat, his song I sing. Yep. He whose gold I eat, his song I sing. Well, this is a people's battle. This is your battle. This is my battle. And by the way, General Stubblebine and I closed our practice, which was the source of our income. We sold our house, and we do not take a single penny for the work that we do, about 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. We do not take a salary. We do not get paid for this. We are doing this literally because we see the consequences of not having it done, and they are disastrous for you as well as for us. And we are determined not to let that happen. But let's be very, very frank here. Without money, we cannot continue the battle. We have spent over $800,000 of our own resources to do this. And we have created the largest, most effective, and most powerful health freedom organization in the world. Well, the well is dry. And so now it's up to each one of us. If everybody listening to this show donated a dollar a month, we would have enough money so that we wouldn't have to ask for money. If some people donate 50 to cover the 49 others who don't donate anything, or people donate 5 if they can, and 50 or 100 if they can, then our side has the money it needs. The other side has more money than God. They have no morals and they have no scruples, and they're after our deaths. That's what they want. They want us to die profitably for their purposes. I would rather not see that happen. Not for me, not for you, not for your children, not for anybody on this planet. And so it's up to us. It's up to us who are resourceful. It's up to us who are informed. It's up to us who have a dollar a month or 10 or whatever. It's up to us who want to see the Natural Solutions Foundation, Valley of the Moon Demonstration, Eco Community succeed because they understand how important it is. And again, the special website for that is www.naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. Our general website is healthfreedomusa.org. And sign up for the Health Freedom e-alert because your action, your mouse click, is essential. I call it being a mouse warrior. And we need millions and millions of mouse warriors to take action and to donate and to disseminate so that other people can get the information. Because people don't know. You don't find this on the major media. Fox News is not carrying this story. Doesn't mean the story isn't real. It means that the news is carefully managed.
Now, in your work, are you dealing much with the water supply, too, at all?
Oh, water is a huge, huge issue. Fluoridation is a water issue. Can we take a few minutes and talk about fluoridation?
Oh, yeah.
Well, in the Gulag, the Soviet Gulag under Stalin, it was learned that political prisoners, who were a pretty feisty lot and very difficult to control, quite unruly, political prisoners became tractable. They became biddable and complacent when their water was fluoridated. And therefore, they were given fluoridated water and then pretty much never raised an objection to anything thereafter. The Germans came along and said, hey, this is pretty cool. And they learned how to fluoridate water from the Soviet Gulag masters, and they took that and used it in the slave labor camps and the concentration camps. And people became biddable and tractable. Of course, they were also starving. That helps control people, too. About halfway through the war, a little more than halfway through the Second World War, the German population became restive, and they said, hey, wait just a minute. We were supposed to win this sucker. And they began becoming oppositional, so the government made the decision to start fluoridating the German population. And guess what? All that dissent died down. Well, at the end of the Second World War, many scientists, not just the rocket scientists from Peenemünde, Werner von Braun and so on, many scientists were brought to the United States, some openly, some secretly, through many programs, not just Operation Paperclip. Among the scientists who came were the pharmaceutical scientists and who had experimented in the concentration camps and the fluoride scientists. The fluoride scientists then conducted two experiments in the United States, without informed consent, of course, one in Newburgh, New York, and one in Salt Lake City. They gave children, matched to control children, they gave children fluoridated water for a year. Now, experimentation on children has a certain unethical flavor that one might say smacks of Nazi medicine. Well, of course, these were Nazi doctors. Anyway, they came here and they did this experiment, and at the end of a year, they found that up between the matched groups, the experimental children and the children who had not received fluoridated water, one group had more cancer of the bone, had more bone breaks, had more tooth decay, had more thyroid disease, had more juvenile diabetes, and had a number of other increases in highly, highly worrisome situations. And the other group did not show that increase. Well, they published the results saying that one group had this increase. They just switched the headings because, in fact, the group with the increases in cancer and bone breaks and diabetes and thyroid disease and so forth was the fluoridated water group. The headings were switched. About 4.5 years ago, the Union of Concerned Scientists forced, through public action, never forget how powerful we are in the aggregate, forced the FDA to re-examine the data. And the FDA said, oh, well, you're right. Look at that. However, upon the completion or the publication of the papers that said that the fluoridated group did better, which, of course, was a lie, the FDA made the rather astonishing determination that having studied a group of children for 1 year, they would now recommend fluoridation for the entire population, for elderly people, for pregnant women, for people with cancer, diabetes, whatever. Everybody could now get fluoridated water. And a huge percentage of the United States has fluoridated water. Fluoridation comes, the fluoride is not the simple element fluoride. It's hydrofluorosilic acid, which is a very, very poisonous compound and which has never been approved for use of water fluoridation. The production of hydrofluorosilic acid comes from the mining of aluminum, the manufacture of potash, and the mining of uranium. Hydrofluorosilic acid is so corrosive and dangerous that to dispose of it safely under the EPA and OSHA regulations is extraordinarily expensive and would cut severely into the profits of the mining operations that produce it. So, rather than pay for its disposal, the FDA now allows these companies to actually receive money from water supply companies and municipalities who buy this poison into the water. But wait, there's more. The part that comes from the uranium mining has low levels of radioactivity. Any level of radioactivity is dangerous. So you're drinking radioactive water, but wait, there's more. The water that we get out of our taps has to be pretty. It has to have sparkle. In order to give it sparkle, it is polished with aluminum salts, like aluminum hydroxide. So you're drinking aluminum, which is associated with the uptick in Alzheimer's disease and with many other neurological and endocrine diseases. But wait, there's more yet. Aluminum and fluoride, both of which are present, by the way, in vaccines. Aluminum and fluoride together are synergistically 50 to 1,000 times more toxic than either one separately. That's what's going on in the water supply in the United States. Plus, when you put that water into plastic bottles, you get bisphthalates, which are a compound class that mimic estrogens, which means you have a xenoestrogen that is directly related to birth defects, infertility, cancer, especially breast and prostate cancer, and a variety of other diseases. Yes, water is indeed an issue. Now, none of this is of a worrisome nature to Codex. It's perfectly okay to have contaminated water, just like it's perfectly okay to have contaminated food. And in the United States, what the FDA does is take something that industry wants, force it through the Codex process, get it approved there, and then bring it home to the U.S. saying, well, of course, it's against U.S. law and U.S. regulation and U.S. public health policy, but if we don't do it, we'll get hit with trade sanctions, huge trade sanctions in the hundreds of millions or billions of dollars a year level by the World Trade Organization. So we have no choice. And, for instance, fructose, which was banned in the United States in the beverage supply until 1985, was forced through the Codex process by the U.S. in 1985. And then they brought that home and said, well, we'd really like to keep fructose out of the beverage supply, but we can't because of Codex. And now the upswing in juvenile diabetes and obesity and adult diabetes and obesity and cardiovascular disease is all being laid at the doorstep of high fructose corn syrup, which was only permitted into the U.S. beverage supply because of this little maneuver, which is repeated again and again at Codex and then brought home. By the way, high fructose corn syrup, 100% of it, as far as I know, is made from genetically modified corn.
I was listening to some program, and I can't remember which. It might have been Jeff Rentz or something of the sort, saying that fluoride may have an activating effect to increase the toxicity of something.
It increases the toxicity of aluminum. Now, when you drink a beverage from an aluminum can, you're drinking dissolved aluminum, and if it's a high acid liquid like juice or soda, which has phosphoric acid, and colas has phosphoric acid or carbonic acid if it's a carbonated beverage, you're dissolving aluminum, and fluoride activates the toxicity. I said earlier that they're synergistically toxic. Fluoride is a neurotoxin. It's also an endocrine toxin. It's also a bone toxin. Fluoride is really poisonous stuff. If you brush your teeth with it, it's like asking for trouble. But people have been led astray by advertising to think that it's good for them. Dentists have been led astray. But then again, these are the same people who use mercury in your mouth. Most people don't know that the origin of the word quack, which of course is what I get called as a good physician, the origin of quack is from the German Quacksilver, which means quicksilver or mercury, and anybody who used mercury in a dental procedure or otherwise was called a quack, meaning a silver-using doctor.
Huh. So also, a lot of these fluorides are bases in the SSRI medications, are they not?
R&D, that is correct. SSRIs, and you remember at the very, very beginning of this discussion, I said that I practiced psychiatry and medicine for a very long time without any medications, without drugs. SSRIs are, in my estimation, permanent damage sources for the nervous system. They are addictive, they are destructive, and they have no clinical application or no justification for clinical use that I can see. And I'm not trained as a psychiatrist.
Okay, and is there any way to chelate or detoxify us with some of these fluorides and things that they're putting into these foods?
Absolutely. The first way to detoxify is to stop eating them. Now, by the way, fluoride is also sprayed with the permission of the ever corporate-friendly FDA and USDA onto our food when it's in storage. Dow Chemical recently applied for a patent to up the amount of fluoride in its antifungal food spray for storage applications from its previous level to 3,300 parts per million. Fluoride's damage and dangers have all been documented at 1 part per million, although the government now allows 4 parts per million in water and beverages. So detox is a very, very important thing to do, not only for fluoride, but for mercury and for lead and for nickel and for the other toxic metals that we're exposed to, and there are many. There are many good ways to detox. One of the cautions, however, is that chelation, which is done orally, is often ineffective because the stomach contents change the EDTA molecules and render them ineffective, which is why EDTA is used as a preservative in foods like mayonnaise and so on, because it's harmless in the body when it goes through the stomach. So unless it's in a very special formulation, or unless it's delivered by suppository or delivered through IV means, the use of the EDTA is likely not to be effective. There are formulations that wrap a molecule of EDTA in a little phospholipid sphere. Micellinized EDTA is absorbed by the body and is effective. And the phospholipid is also very good for your heart. So that's one way to go. Suppositories do work. Americans don't like suppositories, but that's just an emotional prejudice. There's nothing wrong with medication delivered through suppository. And IV is the gold standard of chelation. And it's interesting to note that the government has recently suspended a trial on chelation for autistic children because, God forbid, they should find out that the damage in many of these children is actually caused by metals. That would mean that the whole vaccine industry would come crashing down. So they suspended it, saying that it was a dangerous procedure. Well, that's, of course, nonsense. As a chelating physician, I can tell you that it's just pure economic nonsense to protect the vaccine industry and the drug industry. Detoxification of metals should be done under the careful supervision of a nutritionally trained physician. I can give you 2 websites with which I have no economic or other ties, but these are physicians who are all trained in the use of nutritional procedures. One is the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, www.aaem.com, and the other is the American College for the Advancement of Medicine, www.acam.org. And through these organizations, you can find physicians who know what they're doing. Profound detoxification is not a do-it-yourself activity. It needs to be done under the supervision of somebody who can balance out the entire process and make sure that you're not simply stirring up things that have been deposited in cells and retoxifying yourself and making yourself really, really, really sick. We don't want that. We want people to get better, not worse. We're not practicing allopathic medicine. And so these are very important resources for you. Find somebody who knows both medicine and detoxification and nutrition and work with them closely. You'll be astounded at how many problems and diseases and behavioral issues and emotional issues go away when the body stops being poisoned with these toxic materials, which we were never evolved to be able to process in our bodies, and we certainly are overwhelmed. I want to give our website again, the website about the Panama Project, the Valley of the Moon Project, is www.naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. The website for the Natural Solutions Foundation itself is healthfreedomusa.org, all one word, healthfreedomusa.org. And if you cherish your health, if you cherish your freedom, then I urge you to sign up for the Health Freedom e-alerts and to donate. Small or large donations, that all add up. If you want your voice at Codex, if you want your voice at the table of discussion when it comes to your vaccination or your right to access natural medicine, then this is your battle. Physicians who practice natural medicine are under attack. There is a war against nutrients. There is a war against knowledgeable people. They're currently in New Jersey and in 46 other states. There is either pending legislation or legislation that has passed that says that only a registered dietitian, an RD, can discuss food components, health benefits of food or food components, nutrients, supplements, or any other matters relating to health and food. I ask you, if you've eaten a meal in a hospital, or if you've seen what people in nursing homes eat, these diets are under the complete direction of registered dietitians. If you've eaten in a school cafeteria lately, this is what registered dietitians believe passes for food. Now, are these the only people who should be permitted to talk to us about nutrition and health? Or perhaps is it a right guaranteed by the First Amendment for anybody to speak about nutrition and health? Well, the FDA and the United States government and Codex don't think so. In addition to this registered dietitian being the only person who can talk about this, and that means that your doctor would not be able to tell you to eat more broccoli if you have a history of breast cancer. Only a dietitian would be able to do that if he or she decided to. But in addition to that, any linkage of health and food in any way is forbidden under the proposed regulations of the FDA and under the Codex definition of advertising, which the United States has been bullying through the Codex process. Anybody who speaks about the relationship of health and food or benefits between health and food would be committing a felony here in the United States, and any country that committed that would be subject to trade sanctions. Now, we are opposing that, and we are supporting two bills, one by Chris Cannon of Utah and one by Ron Paul of Texas, that would protect what the First Amendment should already be protecting, and that is your right to link the concepts of health and food. Before 1994, before the Dietary Supplements Health and Education Act, or DSHE, was passed by unanimous congressional consent because of the uproar that people created when they thought they were going to lose all their supplements, Congress backed down and made it a very, very quick about face. Before 1994, before the passage of DSHE, it was illegal in the United States to use the word health and the word food in the same sentence. The FDA marshals with axes would break down signs that said health food or health food store because that was a violation of U.S. law. Books were burned that contained the words health and food in the same sentence. That's where the FDA quite publicly wants to take us once again. And remember that the FDA's operating budget comes largely from pharmaceutical companies' user fees.
I was under the impression that Codex had passed. It just hadn't been implemented. Am I incorrect in that?
Yes, you are incorrect. Okay. Many people have been misled by people who made the incorrect information available that Codex was merely about dietary supplements. That is not true. Codex is about everything that goes into your mouth, with the exception of drugs. And what people were saying is that the 2005, July 4th, ironically, July 4th, ratification of the vitamin and mineral guideline at the Codex Commission meeting in Rome, which I was present for, was in fact the end of the story. No. That's just one guideline about one set of items, nutritional supplements. But what comes from that one guideline is very interesting. Codex has no power. It is a voluntary set of standards and guidelines. But once implemented by a country, then it becomes law. And the World Trade Organization will use the Codex guidelines, if it has no other guidelines, to use for the assessment of who's guilty in a trade violation situation. So the United States jubilantly celebrated the passage of the vitamin and mineral guidelines, which you can find in the Codex e-book that I've mentioned before on our site, healthfreedomusa.org. And that says that the potency, the dose of a nutrient, cannot exceed 15% above what's found in an unchanged food. And to go along with that, the chairman of the Codex Committee on Nutrition and Foods for Special Dietary Uses, Dr. Grossklaus, published a list of suggested levels for nutrients. It would be illegal once Codex standards and guidelines were implemented on this particular area to have more than 10 units, international units, of vitamin E. I take 1,200 IUs of vitamin E per day. It would be illegal to have more than 5 IUs of vitamin D. I take 8,000 international units of vitamin D. My husband takes 10,000 international units of vitamin D per day. And vitamin D at that level has been shown to correlate with a sharp decrease in cancer, a sharp decrease in Alzheimer's, a sharp decrease in cardiovascular disease, a sharp decrease in many of the chronic degenerative diseases, including, of course, osteoporosis. But we're talking about 5 IUs. That would be the legal upper limit. Fluoride, however, is included as a permissible nutrient at an astonishingly high level. Of course, they don't want us protesting the fact that we can't get decent nutrients. And these nutrients, high-potency nutrients or even moderate-potency nutrients, are flying off the shelves in Europe because of the implementation of the Codex standards through the European Food Supplements Directive. That's where the FDA has said they want to take us with nutrients. But there has been tremendous uproar, helped, of course, by the Natural Solutions Foundation. For instance, when the FDA issued a guideline, a draft guideline, which would have turned anything that you use for a health benefit, whether it's hot rocks and a massage or holy water, which were their two examples, or cherry juice for arthritis or anything else that you intended to create a health benefit for yourself or others with, it would have turned those things into untested medical devices and drugs. And, of course, it's illegal to sell or promote or provide untested medical devices or drugs. Within 3 weeks, 588,000 people went to our site to tell the FDA, oh, don't you even think about it. The FDA, of course, very conveniently at that point did not have a working website, and we had the only way to contact the FDA that was available to the public. And the FDA backed off. Will they be back again? Sure they will. But did they back off on that one? You bet. That was 588,000 plus people who said, don't you dare. That's how powerful we are.
That's great. One other thing I'm kind of tracking is there's this privatization of water.
Oh, yes.
And with the privatization means that we won't have any oversight in our water. And from what I understand, do you ever listen to, are you familiar with Dr. Wynn Parker at all?
No, I'm not.
You should check with his archives on RBN on Sunday, his program Sunday mornings. He has been really putting the word out on the problems with the water.
I wonder if you could send me the link. That would be great.
Okay.
Monsanto has purchased all of the water rights in Colombia. Okay. Monsanto is purchasing all of the water rights in large parts of Africa. Monsanto, you will remember, is one of the partners in the Doomsday Vault. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the Doomsday Vault.
No, they're not really.
Okay, that's not a nickname. That's the name of this facility. Monsanto, the government of Norway, the government of the United States, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Bill Gates Foundation, have put a whole bunch of money into hollowing out a mountain on the Arctic archipelago island of Svalbergen, which is way, 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 way above the Arctic Circle. Nobody lives there. Polar bears live there, as a matter of fact, but no people. And they've emptied out a mountain in this cold wasteland, and they are filling it, trying to be filling it, with non-genetically modified seeds of every known variety. They call it the Doomsday Vault. Now, why would they do that? Why would they, first of all, call it the Doomsday Vault? And second of all, why would they save, preserve all of the non-genetically modified seed stock of the world? 300 million seeds or more. And it's constantly being filled. Well, the answer is very simple in my mind, and that is after they despoil the planet and get rid of most of us, then they'll start over again with clean, non-genetically modified seeds. And oh, by the way, they will own the world's water. If this scares you, do something. Take action. Go to our website, healthfreedomusa.org. Sign up for the Health Freedom Alerts donate and become active.
There's two other things I'd like to kind of briefly address, and one of them has to do with in that bailout of the on economic bailout. They slipped in something that had to do with mental health, and the other one has to do with recycled water. And are you familiar with that?
Well, let's talk about the bailout first. Now, I'm not an economist, but as I said before, freedom is indivisible. We cannot take away one kind of freedom without affecting another kind of freedom. And one of the other things that was slipped into the bailout, which according to a number of people who have been willing to talk on YouTube, was the fact that the members of Congress were threatened with martial law this coming Monday if they didn't exceed to the bailout the second time. And one of the things that's in the bailout was the provision that $100 billion of the bailout total was provided to the president for use with no congressional or other oversight. In other words, discretionary funds of $100 billion to the president. That should scare you.
Right.
In addition to that, the mental health provisions were included, and they're quite complex. We could do a whole separate show on the mental health provisions and the issue about mental health parity. Sounds great. We want mental health to be treated at the same rate as any other kind of health, except that what that means is another gift to the pharmaceutical industry and another push forward to compulsory medication for pregnant women, new mothers, children in school, people who do not see things the way other people see them and are considered mentally ill the way political dissidents were considered mentally ill in the Soviet Union, confined to hospitals and tortured and drugged until they either died or stopped being dissidents. This is very, very frightening. There are a number of pieces of federal legislation, and I have spoken and written about this, that provide for the compulsory medical psychiatric evaluation and medication of every single person in the United States.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yes. And as a matter of fact, on our website, healthfreedomusa.org, there's a clip from a documentary called One Nation Under Siege, which Joyce Riley and Dave Van Kleist did, and which both General Stubblebine and I participated in which I talk about the compulsory drugging of children, which is already legally mandated.
So, can we briefly hit recycled water, or are you familiar with it?
I know about the problem, but as you can tell from my previous discussion, I like to know a lot about what I'm talking about, and I
only
know a little about that.
Okay, well, that's fine, but what I'd like to say is I really appreciate, your patience in trying to get this phone call worked out and in coming on my program so that, we could educate the public on what's going on out there with Codex Alimentarius and many other avenues of our food and water. And
well, it's my pleasure. I am joyful when I can share information with people who are receptive and will take it and disseminate it. But we need each other's help. I can't do this alone, just like you can't do it alone.
Right.
We need people to go to healthfreedomusa.org to sign up for the Health Freedom Alerts and become mouse warriors. We also need people to stop eating crap. Stop eating the packaged death that is the American diet, and start eating real food. Get it from farmers. Grow it yourself. Source it. And people say, well, it's expensive. Yes, but cancer is a lot more expensive. Hyperactivity is a lot more expensive. Autoimmune disease is a lot more expensive. Infertility is tragic when you don't want to be infertile. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about packaged death and disease. Stop using fluoride toothpaste. Don't drink fluoridated water. And by the way, water filters will not take fluoridation out of water unless they're extremely complex, expensive, and extensive. So if you run your water out of your tap through a Brita, you're fooling yourself. You need to find another water source. And you need to stop putting a neurological endocrine poison into your bodies, into your kids' bodies, and take control of your health and take control of your food. And let's fight this thing together and win, because the stakes are our lives.
Well, I'm hoping that, I'd love to have an interview with General Stubblebine, and I hope that you'll come back again, Rima.
Absolutely. And I hope that you're going to send me a link to this interview so I can put it up on my site, let people know about your show, and let people know what we've been talking about today.
Okay, well, I'll do so.
And let me give my website one more time.
Okay.
Healthfreedomusa.org. The Panama Project and the International Decade of Nutrition you can find at naturalsolutionsfoundation.org. Buy Valley of the Moon coffee, support health freedom, and don't bring chemicals. Thanks.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.